The following is a fourth-hand production.
They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy?
There's hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
Brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51. The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation, to an out-of-this-world episode of Hysteria 51.
All right, just because the bots are visiting GoForth this week doesn't mean you can get away with crap intros like that.
I kind of did phone that one in. Do you want to start over?
Nope.
Good call.
Broadcasting from the lower fourth dimension, also known as Chicago, via parts unknown Colorado. Woo-hoo. We are your hosts and head UAP wranglers this week. I'm David Flora. He's Brent Hand. We both have lassos out and ready to rope us some.
Thank God.
Some UAPs.
Thank God there is no cameras, because you said lassos out. I literally started doing the lasso motion.
Yeah, me too. You got to. You talk about lassos.
Oh,
do it,
God.
Cowboy.
If there is a hidden camera in this studio, it's going to be like, listen to this fucking guy. Oh, my God. But the NSA. It is UFO week again, finally.
Or UAP now, Brent. You got to stay up with the times.
That is true. And we're not alone. Talking UAPs, UFOs, if you need to. Return to the lower fourth dimension is none other than Mr. MJ Banias.
Now, he's Canadian, but, you know, we won't hold that against him.
That is true.
Actually, pretty envious these days.
Yeah. So MJ Banias, he's an author and freelance journalist who specializes in paranormal culture and the strange. You might remember him on here from talking about his book, The UFO People, A Curious Culture, back a few years ago. But he wears a ton of hats, educator, writer, blogger. Plus, for some extra UFO UAP street cred, he was a former field investigator with the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON, and he's been featured on multiple podcasts and radio shows, including the Creme de la Creme, Hysteria 51, as we talked about. He contributes to Mysterious Universe, Rogue Planet, and The Debrief. You can find him on there. He's written a ton for Vice, and he's just a great, great writer. Now he's thrown his hat into the podcasting ring outside of just being a guest. He hosts his own show, Fringe Network, Alien State. MJ, welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
How's the world of the weird treating you? It's been, I looked, you were on episode 138, and then this is like right around 300. So it's been a minute since you've been on.
Wow. Yeah. It's been good. It's been great. The usual stuff and the weird shit beat continues. You know, we have
the weird shit beat is one of my favorite beats. I'm just gonna let you know.
Yeah, it's my favorite too, because it's just, well, it's nonsense half the time. It's beautiful. It's been busy, man. I mean, since I last came on, I mean, I can't imagine. You know, NASA's now looking into UFOs. Apparently, you have Harvard starting a project. You have, Pentagon task force organization that is like being questioned by Congress on television. I mean, good Lord, things have changed
right
quickly and dramatically. So, I've been fairly busy trying to keep up and writing about it or podcasting about it.
Right.
It's been hectic.
One of the biggest changes is now we've got the creme de la creme of podcasts out there, Fringe Network, Alien State, talking about all these things.
that's right. Yeah.
That's your baby. Hard question, I'm sure. Elevator pitch. Can you sum it up for everyone? Do you have a little blurb or whatever you want to call it?
Totally. Well, elevator pitch for Alien State is fairly simple. In late 2017, the world was notified that the U.S. government was looking into the UFO phenomenon. and that basically baked right into, it seems, the intelligence community was a sort of little alien state of players and individuals, government insiders, I suppose you can call them, agents for the CIA, government contractors, intelligence men and women who were looking into this topic. And the podcast peels the layers away of what they were looking at, who was funding it, who was getting paid, and ultimately, was the big New York Times article that dropped in 2017 and all of this news as it's been presented, does it still sort of stand up to scrutiny, or do we need to keep peeling away at those layers? And what will we find once we kind of, you know, throw back all of those layers?
Right.
What stinky, dirty onion will be buried underneath all of that?
I think that what you said, the stinky, dirty onion is very true. There are so many layers to this, and you've done a really good job, as I've listened, of putting it in a graspable, attainable understanding of what's going on, because there's a lot of players, there are a lot of names, there's a lot of things that have happened in this, and you're kind of telling it from the beginning going forward as far as this is what had happened and these were the people and this is why. That's a big undertaking. And lucky for you listening to it, you got a big team working on this, which is great. You got producers, editors, writers, fact checkers. Hell, you talk about your legal team. How did this come to be, and what made you go the podcast route as opposed to what you've done, because you work, you know, in writing and journalism outside of that? What was like, I want to do it in audio form?
Sure. I was approached by Something Else, which is the studio that produced this podcast. They are, a wing of Sony Entertainment. So they're Sony. Sony owns a bunch of shell podcast corporations that hide. No. So Something Else approached me and they said, listen, you know, we are thinking about this podcast idea, but we don't know how to make it work.
Yeah.
Because of how convoluted it was.
That's kind of what I was trying to say in my ramblings about the onion. Yeah.
Yeah. It there's so many acronyms, so many names, so many sort of side paths that you can go down. There was this general concern of like, we don't know how to tell the story, and we want somebody who's kind of been reporting on it, and, you know, would you be interested? So I was brought in, and I thought it was a great project, and we spent the first 2 or 3 months really figuring out how to tell this story in the simplest way possible. If you're a big fan of the Weird Shit Beat and you're a member of sort of that community, the UFO community or the paranormal community, you probably know a lot of the story. But the kicker for Sony is, you know, we want everyone to listen to this, not just the UFO people. So can you tell the story in such a way that cuts out the acronyms? Can you tell the story that doesn't have like convoluted government names and offices and whatever. So we tried our best, but ultimately it was targeted always for the general public to get the story, because let's be honest, if you're in the UFO community, you think the UFO question is the most important question there is, and there's nothing outside of it. And the rest of the world ought to stop turning, because, you know, UFOs, but to the rest of the world, they know nothing about our little universe. It's a very insular space, and most people don't give a shit. I've had so many people come talk to me and say, oh my god, who's this Lou Elizondo guy, and holy shit, Tom DeLonge's into UFOs, what the fuck. Like, that's literally sorry, can I swear on this show?
So
people are like, I had no idea this was a thing. And the vast majority of people who have contacted me and just reached out and said, you know, thanks for doing this or whatever, have been people who had never known the story at all. So they were starting from literally, wait, what happened in 2017? Like, that was their knowledge of UFOs. And they, you know, had some interest, and they started listening, and you know, they got into it. So that was the big challenge. And so Something Else brought me in, and we started putting it together. And then, as you know, with every investigative series podcast, you start with one idea and it sounds amazing. And then you start the actual job and you do 6 months of recording, and you realize everything you thought you were going to do is not possible or is not going to happen, and it all falls apart. And then you basically start from scratch about 6 months in, and then you have 2 months really to put a show together. That's all podcasting. And that's where we ended up. It was a wild ride. Let's put it that way.
I think it's a smart thing to do something for people who aren't as engaged in the community, because you throw out names like Tom DeLonge, Luis Elizondo, even, you know, Bigelow and all those.
Yeah.
People just throw those names out there, assuming everybody knows who they are, but the general public who is interested in, are there UAPs? Are there UFOs?
Right.
They don't know those people from Adam. So yeah, I think that's a smart thing. And you, MJ, I think you and I share a lot of this these similarities in that you describe yourself as a romantic skeptic, where, you know, you like to question things, but you still kind of have an open mind. You hope that there's some weird stuff out there in the world. And I feel like a kindred spirit in that sense. And here, you know, the both of us are in the thick of things, making a living, deep diving into the fringe. So how do you see yourself and your beliefs in this world of the weird that that we often engage in every day?
Right. Yeah. Well, for me, belief is the enemy. So I think that's the sort of the first spot I go to. I mean, I
think that's a great way to look at it.
Yeah.
No matter what side you fall on.
Yeah. I don't want to believe you. Right. Like, I want you to prove it to me. and I think that's where, you know, UFO research or paranormal research or whatever, you know, really needs to be or go. And unfortunately, journalists like you and me aren't really the people doing the research or doing the actual studies. But I think the job of journalism and the job of podcasts like this one are to kind of point to those studies and say, okay, well, yeah. You know, did you do your job well? You know, yeah. Did you prove it to me? Or did you prove it to us? And question and to be critical. It's not to be a skeptic or to be a debunker, which seems to be this like phrase that, you know, the UFO people love to throw around.
A lot of people love
Doherty. So Doherty.
Yeah. A lot of people love to wear that badge for one reason or not, or to you know,
yeah. Or go after, you know, whatever. And it's like, okay, but it's not about necessarily being skeptical or being a debunker. It's about, listen, I'll give you the time of day. And I think that's where my romanticism is when I call myself a romantic skeptic. I will give you the time of day to tell me your story, explain your evidence, tell me what happened, go over your data, and show me, so I can be convinced. And I will never turn anyone away. You know, I'll be like, listen, you have a weird story to tell. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we kind of have the conversation of, well, listen, this kind of exists in the realm of story or anecdote, and I will add it to my compilation of other stories. And I think it's awesome and amazing. And, you know, I look forward to hearing more. But I don't, like, I can't adjust my view of reality because of your campfire story.
There are a thousand archivists out there that can do that and take a story and write it down and keep it. And that's great. But will you talk about in your Roy moment, so to speak, you talk to this guy. And I love that, you know, I've had a lot of experiences with that, with people come forward and they say, I did this and this and that. And for better or worse, your mind goes, I believe you. I don't believe you. That's human nature. Sure. But I also love those interactions. Is it the people like that, those interactions that keep you interested in this, or is it the pursuit of the unknown? Because for me, it's the pursuit of the unknown. That's what I love.
Sure.
I would venture a guess it's probably the same for you.
Oh, well, fun fact. Don't go to hell. I'm more interested in the people. Because I think one thing when I first started the UFO thing, like started looking into the weird shit beat, It took about maybe a year. I was in it for a year, and there's that, like, you fall down the rabbit hole for a little while, you become convinced that it's all real for a little while, and you start, you know, doing, like, you start reading, like, I don't know,
the Goldilocks phase or the honeymoon phase or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Call it. Yeah,
you know, and then after that, some people stay sunk, like some people continue to fall down the rabbit hole or continue going down it. And then some people like they stop and they just relax and they float back to the surface. This is like John Keel's thing, right? I think he says this in Mothman Prophecies in his book. He says, like, people who venture into the paranormal world, right? It's like stepping into quicksand, and some people just keep sinking and some people choose to relax and they float back up, and then they can, like, they can leave, they can escape the quicksand, and then they can kind of like observe it from the outside. That's kind of my interest. I like standing on the edge of the quicksand and just watching people fall into it and then like seeing what happens. Or like, how far down do they go? Do they need me to pull them out sometimes? Or can I just leave them be? You know what I mean? And they'll float back up. And that's kind of where I exist. I like kind of observing from the outside. And the reason is because I don't think we'll ever find out like the answer to the phenomena or the phenomenon, whatever it is, right? We've been like as a species wrestling with the unknown for a very long time. And we've been telling ghost stories around campfires for millennia. And we've made significant discoveries. Like we've learned, well, that thunder isn't caused by an angry God. That's great. But I think there's just like forever going to be that like continuation of the mystery. And I think that's watching people engage with that for me is the interesting bit. Watching how people adapt stories, change stories, tweak stories, watching folklore evolve over time. You know, that's what's compelling, I think.
David, where do you fall on that same? Is it the people for you or is it the pursuit?
For me, honestly, I think it's the pursuit because some of the people, I don't know. I kind of get a little upset and I don't want to say scared of them. It's more of like, because I they're not necessarily dangerous, but it's frustrating when all these facts and things that can be easily provable and credibility are ignored.
Yeah. And that's not everyone.
The pursuit of just there being something weird going on that people can't explain or that there's something out to get them, you know?
It's not everyone, but there definitely are those people that, you know, well, I know what I saw, be damned, even if it's an explainable thing, insert whatever. So you have to have a little bit of give and take, you know, no matter what you're doing, you know, otherwise you're not doing anyone justice.
And what MJ brought up was what we've brought up briefly before, Brent, was this God of the gaps. Remember what I was talking about, that how those gaps are shrinking and shrinking and shrinking every time we learn something new or scientifically we advance, but there's still gaps there, which are fine. But a lot of people say, well, that's the weird stuff, or that's God, or that's, you know, XYZ, some kind of fictional thing that I can't prove. That's the God of the gaps. And my interest in it is that pursuit, like you said, Brent, the pursuit of shrinking that gap, not so much the people, but I completely see MJ's point that those people are fascinating.
Well, that's a 2-1, so we overrule you, MJ. You're gonna have to change your opinion.
I am purely interested in the mystery now.
Speaking of mysteries, let's go to a break and pay some of our bills. We'll be a mystery who's paying this weekend. When we come right back, we are still here on Hysteria 51. Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it. So it's very high on pronunciation, too. So you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And, you know, our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation. Yeah, that's right. But they designed it for long-term retention, you know. If you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do, and then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in, and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition, and it hears you. You get to use, like, the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused or really cool. I'd go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and we have, both of us have given the seal of approval because we wanted to do this long-term, and it's something that it works. You know, and we don't do long-term stuff like this. And this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now. Get started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit RosettaStone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem. How do they do it?
Rashate, you're 50% off. Rashate. Redeem it. 50% off. RosettaStone.com/today. Do it today. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when Brent and I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, we thought, man, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. Brent is trying a plan right now and says that it works like a charm from Chicago to Nashville as he makes his big old move. Mint Mobile is working for him. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch the overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/hysteria. That's mintmobile, mintmobile.com/hysteria, hysteria. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/hysteria. $45 upfront payment required. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
You know, we were talking about skeptic, and it's a loaded term. You know, whenever you say the word skeptic, it kind of makes people fill in and things. And yet here we all are. I think we all I always call myself like a hopeful skeptic, or I like the romantic, as you said. But we all are here in the thick of things, making a living, deep diving into the fringe. How do you see your beliefs in this world of the weird? How have they changed? You talked about how you believed in them, but doing this show, do you find that you have more faith in like the government and what's going on, or less faith? And you're just like, ugh, I feel like I'm drowning in a sea of, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm drowning in the sea of, I don't know. I think that's probably where I rest.
Yeah.
You know, the inherent problem is we say something like, you know, do I trust the government or do I not trust the government? I mean, what a loaded thing. Government is like literally made up of what, like 100,000 employees. And the main like MO of the government is just like apathy. You know, like if you've ever dealt with any government employees, like even just like the IRS and trying to get your taxes done, it's like, it's just apathy. Like they just like, nobody gives a shit. And yet the government continues to run as if the government's like one organism, and it really isn't. So, so when we talk about, you know, do I trust the government? Well, you know, I'm not sure if that's really the question, you know, do I trust the people who, came forward from the government, you know, making claims, you know, that's kind of like, do I trust the specific individual is really the question. because I'm sure there's lots of people in the government who are lovely and I trust them. And, you know, I'd say, here, watch my kids. And, you know, I'm going to go, you know, right. go to a restaurant with my wife. You're in charge. See you in a couple hours. And it'd be perfectly fine. And everything would be great. And the kids would have like bedtime stories read and, you know, perfect. And then there's people in the government who like you would never leave your kids alone with because they're psychopaths. So that's kind of the, for me, the problem with the question, I guess. But to answer you, it's like, yeah, it's a big I don't know. Because as there have been individuals in the government who have held power, who have made decisions, who have had really like bad agendas or have done just generally bad things. In the later part of the show, we talk about MKUltra and we talk about the government's kind of remote viewing program and sort of the mentality during the Cold War was a sort of, you know, by any means necessary approach.
Yeah.
Right.
The fringe conspiracy stuff that really isn't a conspiracy because it happened kind
of. Yeah. And it's because I think you had people within the government who said, listen, you know, we're the good guys. No matter what we do or how we act, we are always the good guys. So we can do whatever we want, cause as much harm as we want, injure as many people as we want, torture as many people as we want. But at the end of the day, we're still the good guys, right? And right. if you walk into the government or out of the government with that mentality, well, the ends for you will always justify like whatever the means is or are, right? So you'd have no problem, like, you know, electroshocking people and ripping their fingernails out. And you'd at the end of the day be like, I'm still the good guy,
right?
Even though I did these horrible things. And I think that's the kicker, right? When you think about, you know, the UFO interpretation of the government, like, or sorry, the UFO community's interpretation of the government, right? One, they view the government as like this big spooky monster. Like it's like one, it's like the Mind Flayer in Stranger Things, right? It's this one kind of organism that controls. It's not really that, but they view it like that. And for, you know, there's reasons for this. One, it's simple. But two, the government seems to kind of act like this. It always kind of acts in this, like, we will break all the rules to win. And you know, that's nefarious, is really, that's nefarious. And you know, I don't want to say it is bad. But you walk out of doing all this research being like, man, I don't know if I should trust this individual or I shouldn't trust this individual based upon what I know about them and how they've lied or how they've used like lies of omission or mistruths or disinformation and you know, how they've behaved. So you, for sure, you get the kind of spooky feeling and you get nervous about it.
Well, and speaking of individuals and specifically your show, your series does a heavy coverage of Tom DeLonge and To the Stars Academy, TTSA. And for good reason, you know, a rock star somehow started a company with an ex-CIA person or peeps and government people and broke news to the world about UAPs. It has, for better or worse, changed the narrative. And this is someone that we found out after, you know, the WikiLeaks and, you know, when he was emailing back and forth with John Podesta, and we kind of learned all these things through backdoor channels. My question might be a pointed one, but I think it's important to ask, do you see people like DeLonge that were reaching out and stuff? Do you ever see people like that and worry that they're being taken for a ride? As in, is he being used by the powers that be? Or did he really align with what was needed as a figure out of truth through research,
sure.
Jim Simovin, who you spoke with, has alluded to?
I think my favorite part of the show, and I think this happens in episode 2, so I'm not spoiling it for anybody. Maybe it's the end of episode 1. But there's a great part where Tom DeLonge, after the December article comes out in 2017. So this is now, you know, we know who Lou Elizondo is. We know who Chris Mellon is. Like, they're all in the spotlight at this point. You know, Tom is being interviewed by some, like a rock radio show, I think in San Diego or something. And he basically talks about how he wasn't really having conversations with all these people and he wasn't like deep into it. It was more like handshakes and hellos, and that's how he knew them. And then he was using name dropping and the ability to say, oh yeah, I talked to Chris Mellon or I talked to Elizondo.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like on some deep level. It was just like they had one conversation over Zoom. And now he's talking to other guys saying, oh yeah, I know this guy. And like, oh, you know that guy. And all of a sudden he's literally,
well, so-and-so knows so-and-so. And so you get like this.
Yeah. And Tom DeLonge, like, bless his heart for all of the people who are going to say like, you know, he's some useful idiot or whatever. The guy literally like bluffed intel, and he lied and was able to convince counterintelligence agents and intelligence like officers and CIA officials that he was having these conversations. You know what I mean? Like he was able to convince them that this was all legitimate, to the point where they like signed on with him. Yeah. So I'm not sure who's the useful idiot here. You know what I mean? Like, if I had to, you know what I mean?
Congratulations, assholes. You played yourselves.
Yeah. And I think it. So, yeah, well, like, exactly. Right. Like, they, like, he was sort of playing them more, right. I think, than they were playing him. And I think what he offered them was a way out to talk about these issues in the open, which is really what they wanted to do, not for conspiratorial reasons or not because the big shadowy government told them to and they were now disinformation agents. I think guys like Lou Elizondo, guys like Chris Mellon, guys like Jim Simmons, they believe so much that this is important that any opportunity to speak out that was seemed like legitimate and credible, they were going to take anyway.
Right.
So they did. And Tom DeLonge was really the only guy who was kind of offering that handout and being like, come with me if you want to have fun. And they did. right. And I think where it all went wrong was, I think there was just a massive misunderstanding of like, this is what we're going to do and this is how much money we're all going to make and whatever. And that's not how it played out. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, everyone thought they'd easily get 50 mil when they went public. You know, they got two. You know what I mean? Like, reality quickly set in. And that's why it kind of all started to fall apart.
Man, later on. In the UFO world, there was so much infighting off of DeLonge and TTSA. It was crazy to sit back and watch. And you had the people that if you said something negative, you got jumped on. And if you said something positive, you got jumped on. So I just kind of sat back and watched it unfold kind of type thing.
Yeah. I mean, UFO Twitter is wonderful. It's incredibly tribal. You know, people draw their lines in the sand and they will defend them to the death, and people will circle around the leaders that they sort of respect and admire, and they will, you know, be their army for them. And you know, that's kind of how it's always been. UFO Twitter is no different than, let's say, you know, the older, you know, UFO Facebook groups that existed. And then even before that, there were like, you know, the zines and stuff. Yeah, and that, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's always kind of been like that. You always had kind of like your UFO fanboys who circled around their kind of UFO celebrity. It's just magnified now, I guess, because there's just more social media.
One of the things you said, I think it was in episode one, it might have been two, but you were talking about DeLonge talking to Rogan. And he said he's talking about this stuff and it's so cringe it makes your palms sweaty.
Yeah.
Looking at the Rogan interview. And I've kind of said before the same thing and been bashed a little bit about it. But then you have like Jim Simovin, who is a former CIA spook. It's like, yeah, he kind of cracked the code and figured it out, you know, as far as what was true. He's kind of figured it out. It's so hard for me to wrap my head around what to believe and what not to believe when reading these things.
Yeah, it is literally like, it just sounds so insane. Like everything. And that's the hardest struggle when you're trying to do journalistic work. Like with this podcast, I mean, if you want to know stress, our fact checker and our legal team has like experienced significant stress trying to figure out like what's legitimate and what's authentic and what isn't, because there's so much misinformation, but more importantly, no one's willing to give you a straight answer. And if you start asking kind of pointed direct questions because you want a straight answer from them, they automatically just stop talking to you.
I have 1,000 calls, emails from people that they tell me one thing, but I can't tell. You can't say that. I won't go.
Well, exactly. And then our fact checker will come back and be like, listen, I know, you know, we have information on this, but we can't get a straight answer from anybody regarding it. So I'm not sure if we can put it in the show. Mm-hmm. And especially if it's a touchy subject that like Sony could potentially be like served a cease and desist.
Right.
Like the legal team is very much like, okay, well, hold on. Like we really, let's take a step back. Let's assess. Let's figure out, you know what I mean? So that was the biggest. That was like a big challenge, right? Because it's not like just me doing a podcast, right? Like there was like a team of 20 people who are all working on this. And it was, we had to like negotiate things in and out of the script. It was hectic because, you know, you need to kind of point out these weird, we don't know the story, but we kind of do. So
yep.
That's just what we, yeah, it was, yeah. interesting.
So this is such a heady thing for people in this to understand. What's it going to take to be taken serious by the average person? Because we're getting there. But they're still, when they say that we're having, you know, Congress is going to talk on this, the late night talk shows say it and the crowd chuckles, you know. What do you think the turning point is, other than disclosure, which, you know, what do you think it's going to take? Just more people coming forward or what?
Sure. This is something that Casey, my producer, and I sort of talked about this in the car driving in Vegas. So in episode 4, you're introduced to a man named Robert Bush, who was an investigator for the OSAP program. So he worked under Bigelow Aerospace. And it's really cool because he's the first one from Bass ever to break their NDA, basically, and go on record to talk about what they did for Bigelow Aerospace during the OSAP days. So it's really cool to hear him talk about what they did. But then when you hear about what they actually did at times, I remember my producer Casey was like, this just sounds like it's completely batshit crazy. Like, why would anyone ever take this seriously? And I think what it's going to take first, honestly, is the individuals who have been kind of involved within the UFO, let's say maybe government work, or maybe more, let's say professional UFO work, really like disclosing like all of the weird and silly things they did, because you're not going to move forward until you kind of air out, you know, the old dirty laundry and say, listen, this is what we did. We accept we fucked up. We accept this sounds stupid and is stupid. Now let's move forward properly. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, they spent so much time shoving everything under a rug that everyone just said, yeah, okay, so this is all BS and we understand. And now they're going, well, maybe not. And people are like, well, now I don't know what to believe, or I'm just going to keep pretending and downplaying this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the message from the very beginning in 2017 in December was orchestrated, right? They sold the American public the ATIP program, right? We're looking at military encounters only with high data, you know, relatively low strangeness. This is what we're doing. It's a national defense issue. But then really, when you start, again, peeling back the layers of that onion, you're like, no. There was like they were chasing goblins in Utah, and they were using baby toys to communicate with some unseen entity. And they were having mock UFO crash retrieval drills that were being like paid for like by taxpayer dollars. So you have this moment where, listen, we want the world to be convinced that, you know, UAP are something we should take seriously, which is fine. But they kind of led with the most sane stuff and purposefully kind of didn't talk about the really crazy shit in the back, right? And now that's all coming out. So you're only destroying the credibility of what you've done by hiding it in the first place, right? And people have come after me. People have said, you know, well, you're part of the problem, MJ. You're trying to undo the progress we've made. It's like, oh, no. I'm a journalist. My job is to just shine light where there's darkness and to document all this. That's my job. I'm doing my job. You probably shouldn't have lied in the first place.
Exactly.
If you would have done your job, right, we wouldn't be in this situation, right? But my job as a journalist isn't to be friends with you, and my job as a journalist isn't to take a side or to believe or to push an agenda or to be a soldier for the cause, right? That's not my job at all. My job is to figure out what the hell is actually going on, and we're starting to realize that this entire government thing, you know, wasn't as sort of reasonable sounding as it sort of they made it sound to be, I guess.
Right.
And ultimately, if you want to move forward, right, you need to get all that shit out in the open first. You know what I mean? You need to kind of tell us where the bodies are buried so we can take all those like dead people and give them proper burials and put that all to rest before we can proceed down a path of like mutual respect and understanding. But, you know, I'm not sure if that's ever going to happen. But it could. You know what? I'm an optimist. Maybe one day that will happen. But then all of the cool kids in the UFO world who wear like their sunglasses inside all the time and are just too cool for school, right? Wait, they need to get over themselves, right? They need to get over themselves a little bit. Yeah.
No, that's absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. People who are kind of out of touch with it. They just hear what they're fed and regurgitate it. They think they're the bee's knees in this kind of stuff. But this next question or two for you, MJ, I think is directly implicated by what you just said, and that is, of course, the $64,000 question. Are we going to see disclosure eventually come out of this? And it, yes or no, what does true disclosure look like to you?
Oh, such a ridiculous. No, I'm just joking.
No, it's a shitty thing.
You've already kind of said no, we won't see, but yeah, but like, so what do you think the goal is?
Well, okay. I mean, I guess first, what do we mean by disclosure? Right. That's right. Kind of like that's my go-to question. Sure. What do we mean by this?
That goalpost keeps moving and moving and moving. So everyone kind of has their own.
And it's like, you know, does that mean aliens? Does that mean that it's just UFOs are a thing? You know, like, so let's, you know, okay. If we sort of take a step back, you know, are UFOs real in the sense of like, people, military pilots, people like you and me, do we see weird things we can't identify in the sky? Yes, that's all real because obviously people see unidentified things in the sky. But, you know, does that equal aliens or does that equal what's the new one that everyone's saying? Precognitive non-human intelligence. Mm-hmm. Like, no, that doesn't mean that at all, right? Like disclosure equals UFOs are real. Sure. But then the next question is UFOs equal question mark, right? Because I think UFOs equal a lot of things. They equal Chinese lanterns and weather balloons and airplanes and satellites and the misidentification of the International Space Station all the time. Yeah. And maybe, right, maybe the big if, the big $64,000 question, as you said, is like, do they equal something anomalous, like truly anomalous? You know, that's the I don't know, because none of that's been ever proven really. So, you know, is disclosure going to happen? You know, I don't think we've done enough work really to even ask that question.
But it's the one that everyone wants because really disclosure means that they just landed on the White House and now we all know. And I don't see that happening anytime
because it's
soon.
It's the simplest answer. It's the simplest question to ask and it's the simplest answer to give, right? Like when does disclosure happen? What will be disclosed? That is like literally the simplest question because you're literally taking an incredibly complex situation and boiling it down to like an X or Y kind of scenario. And that's just not how it works, right? That's not how real life functions.
Unfortunately, yeah. And at the same time, that's kind of what everybody wants too, you know? Probably because it is so simple.
It is easy, yeah. That's why conspiracy theories are so successful, right? You know, there's a reason why you have a horrible job. You're not making a lot of money. You know, the economy sucks. There's reasons why the climate is horrible and why we're slowly killing ourselves. And it's, you know, there's centuries of, you know, financial and capitalist systems being put into place. And that's a very convoluted subject that you need, you know, a major in economics to understand. But if you just like blame people, like if you're just like, oh, you know whose fault it is? It's, you know, the MJs of the world, right? You know, if we just blame that one group, all of our problems are gone. Well, this is why conspiracy theories are simple, right? Listen, your life sucks because reptile aliens have taken over and they actually work for like, you know, the Zionists or something. It's like,
which is all controlled by Amway in the end, you know?
Like, yeah, exactly. There's like this Illuminati and they govern everything and that's why your life sucks. Like, no. It's just like post-capitalism in the 21st century. And like, you know, like there's, yeah, it's
easier to accept than reality.
It is. It is easier to accept than reality. And that's kind of the...
There's a little bit of a seduction or a good feeling of being in the know. Like you don't know. I know what the problem is. Now, the problem might be, like you said, it's the Illuminati and the lizard people and blah, blah, blah. But it's very seductive to know, well, I can't do better because XYZ, even if XYZ is made up, a lot of people really just believe that.
Right. And it doesn't matter how outlandish XYZ is. Like, I remember during the California wildfires, you literally had politicians making claims that the fires were started by like a Jewish super weapon.
Space laser.
Space laser, right? That was built by like a whole bunch of like wealthy Jewish families.
Soros.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And people believed it because it's easier to understand that right? Like, it's easier to wrap your mind around blaming a common enemy than it is to understand, like, listen, climate change is a real problem. These are the changes you will need to make in your life in order to fix it. You know, this is the economic toll of all, right? It just, you simplify a really big problem into something super, super simple. And I think the UFO community at times sort of suffers from this as well. We take an incredibly complex situation, scenario, whatever, and the desire to simplify it and the desire to say, these guys over here are on my team because we all believe the same thing and we're going to go to war against the bad guy,
right,
whoever that is.
Yeah.
Right. And then you kind of get like that oorah moment, right? Like that, you know, like Semper Fi and like, here we go. It's war, right? And it's like, it's not that, right? Like, it's not how the real world is, but
everybody's on the same team.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
A lot of people aren't looking for the truth to come out to everyone so long as they're involved in the truth. Like, yeah. I want to know the truth, but I don't care if it gets out to everyone. Well, you can tell me, or I want to be a part of it. And that's the problem, is that there's not enough people just working towards, you know, working together.
It's powerless people who are seeking some kind of power to help their insecurities, you know? It's
and, you powerless and that whole people.
the dangerous thing we're coming up with these days is how it's encroaching on politics, and the absolute toadstool that said those space laser thing, people believe because that person's in now a position of power and can now say, I'm fighting for you to get to the truth, whereas they have no intention of that whatsoever. They're just trying to get money for themselves.
Yeah,
sorry, I mean, political rant over, I guess.
No, but whether it's money or just fame or glory or just the fact that you just feel good because you have people standing behind you, you know, that all ties into it. And I think we see the same thing within the UFO world, right? You have sort of big players who have followers, who make a lot of promises to their followers. And, you know, just sort of say, listen, you guys have the inside scoop. I've told you everything I know. You know, you're one of the insiders now. You know, you're in the know. But, you know, the problem is those individuals then kind of don't start fact checking the person that they're following, right? Yeah. They don't start kind of trying to figure out, you know, is this person telling me the truth? Is this person maybe playing with the truth a little bit and trying to convince me of something, right? And that's where it starts to kind of fall apart, right? It's great. I wish every UFO insider would tell me everything they know, because then I could fact check it all and I could figure out what the truth is. But they don't, unfortunately.
Yeah, those sons of bitches. That's how it works.
If you all ran for office, would and this is for both of you, how would you answer the question if it were posed to you, you know, will you tell us about aliens? Will you tell us about everything the government knows in terms of this kind of stuff? How would you answer that?
Wow. I'll go first. sorry, Brent. I'm going to go first. I think, well, I don't know. I mean, listen, if I was being elected to office, well, first of all, I'm Canadian. So people don't ask those questions in Canada.
Give it time.
Because we know how preposterous it sounds. But I think if I was running for office in America and if I was running for office in like one of the northern democratic states, I would say something like, yeah, you know, listen, if I'm elected president and there are aliens, I would let you know because, you know, this is a democracy and you deserve to know the truth. And then if I was running in like the southern states, you know what I mean, that are predominantly like Republican, I would say something like, oh no, the government knows all about aliens. They're already here amongst us and I will expose every single one of them.
That is a very well stated way to go about it. Yeah. I'm going to do my best to find out, or I'm going to do my best to shield you from, depending on where you're running from.
That's right. And not only that, make sure you have a gun because those aliens aren't bulletproof. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, sorry. I'm Canadian. I'm very critical of your weird gun laws. Yeah.
What's your hope that as people go forward,
you got to answer.
I agree. Like I agree that it's 100%. It's 100% where you're running from. But I think my go-to would be, I'm going to do my best to try to figure out everything, and everything that I can figure out, I'll be bringing to the American people or to my constituents. You know, the same fluff we've heard throughout history from people. And then it gets swept under the rug and you don't hear anything because, you know, it's either not fit to restate or it's too juicy to restate. I don't know. I'm not privy to those things.
Too hot for Congress.
Too hot for Congress. Ow! As people start listening to Alien State, what's your hope their takeaway is? Do you have one, or just enjoy themselves to open their eyes, or to give money to the lizard people that control your show? I mean, which is it?
Well, okay. First of all, 5 stars, great reviews. Buy all of the things we suggest you buy via our ads because, you know, that helps. We decided that the show had to be sort of entertaining because we knew the topic itself has sort of significant entertainment value. So I think at first we wanted it to be sort of funny and we wanted it to kind of be a little bit different than the typical kind of investigative series podcast. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to make people kind of like miss time during the show, right? We wanted you to start listening and be like, holy shit, it's over. And you know, like that's what we wanted. So hopefully that's what happens. Hopefully. The second thing was obviously to do the journalistic work, right? To fill in the gaps in the story that really haven't been reported on or really haven't been talked about in the news headlines. You know, there's a general understanding that the U.S. government was investigating UFOs or something, and I don't know much about that. So what happened? And if you just started reading kind of news headlines and going down the UFO Twitter rabbit hole, you would get sort of one version of the story. We wanted to provide kind of the whole picture as best we could in 8 episodes, obviously without using any acronyms whatsoever. So we hope that you walk away from the show learning and having a good understanding that really the way the story was told and the way the story has been told is not really the whole story and it's not really what it seems. So let's work together, dear listener, to understand what's going on. That's my hope and my intention with the first season.
Well, it comes through, I think, fantastic. Like I said, it really does a great job of peeling away and telling the story in an understandable way. The production value is through the roof, and it is super entertaining. You do a fantastic job. So I can't tell everyone enough how much I think you guys should listen to this show.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you so
Absolutely.
Much.
Absolutely. And if you guys go to the show notes, there's going to be links to everything, so you'll be able to find it and his other works. So please do so. Real quick before I let you go, you work on anything else outside of this, or where can everyone look forward to from you?
Sure. Always kicking around the debrief. So hopefully the podcast forced me to take some time off of that because of just the amount of work it was. So hopefully you'll see my work kicking around the debrief some more. And we are definitely in talks, or I'm definitely in talks rather, for a second season. So hopefully Alien State gets picked up for season 2 and you'll see me kicking around the podcast world a little bit longer.
Absolutely. Well, MJ, thank you so much for joining us. We always have a pleasure. And thank you for doing the work and making it palpable. Yeah. It's hard to do. I don't know if that's coming across right, but you're doing a fantastic job. So,
well, thank you very much. I truly appreciate it.
We'll be right back with more Hysteria 51. Oh, man. What a world to be living in. Disclosure, no disclosure, maybe. Infighting, Twitter. It's like a big family reunion. Just everyone's mad at everyone and no one knows what's going on and there might be aliens.
It's just the way pretty it goes. Perfect analogy there.
I asked him, you and I didn't get a great time to talk about it on there, but we haven't done a ton of the UFO babble on here, you and I, yet. Do you feel the truth is getting out there, or is this more just a, looky what I'm doing over here to not pay attention? I don't know if that's making any sense, but where's your head fall? Because you don't do as much UFO stuff as I have done in the past.
No, I do specific cases here and there, like Falcon Lake incident up in Canada.
Not to be confused with the Falcon Punch incident at the mall the other night. That's different. Falcon Punch.
I'll tell you what. I don't think it's necessarily a distraction from anything for people because I don't think enough of the public cares about it.
Yeah, which kind of surprises me.
Yeah, like you can't put this up against things like abortion and gay marriage, you know, and separation of church and state. It's still going to play second fiddle to all that
always,
stuff.
Always, yeah.
I don't think it's going to be a distraction.
It's just interesting to me when they go, hey, there's UAPs in the air and they're coming and we don't know what they are. Some people, yeah. How'd the Dodgers do last night?
Well, that is true. Now, I do think it's very fascinating that more stuff is coming out and the government itself, people in the government that, you know, are as close as anybody to this are saying, yeah, something's going on. That's interesting.
Something's fucky. That's the official term. Something's fucky.
Something's real foobar. but it's still like, apparently it's still a big deal for them to just say, look, everybody, it's aliens. I don't think so. I think you could lead Glip Glorp out onto the stage at a press conference, you know, presidential address or something, and say, look, everybody, this is a Pleiadian from Alpha Rigel 9. And, you know, all he has to do is do some weird tentacle shit, and then everybody's going to be like, wow, so it's real, and you assholes were lying, and we figured you out. How'd the Dodgers do? Yeah. That's what's going to happen. It's right. Not going to be this huge societal upheaval, you know? I was actually talking to my old co-host, Dave, not too long ago, and he made the point of people being like, great, disclosures here. I see this. What's this mean for me? You know, what am I going to get out of
this? How does this affect my day-to-day life? And if it doesn't, do I really care?
Are the gas prices at the pump going down? Like, what? And it's sad. It's sad that we're at that state in society, but I don't think disclosure would screw things up like everybody thinks it will.
I agree, but I kind of am the same way as MJ of I don't think we're anywhere near it. You know,
probably not.
I don't know. He did say one thing. It was somewhere in episode one, I believe. It was a quote. He said, nothing is ever what it seems. And to keep that in mind. And I think that is the takeaway from this episode and everything going on in the world. Everything that's going on in the world. Nothing is ever what it seems. Just keep that in mind, in the back of your mind, kicking around, and it'll do a lot of good for your way of thinking, I think. But what do I know? I host a podcast to tell dick and fart jokes about aliens and conspiracies. So do with that information what you
tentacle
will.
And fart jokes.
Tentacle porn, you say? Guys, if you want to tell us your thoughts, though, if you actually think the disclosure is imminent or you think it's way off or whatever, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Hop on Facebook. Go to Hysteria Nation. That is our Facebook discussion group. We'd love to have a conversation there. Also, tweet to us at Hysteria51Pod. You can even hashtag UFO Twitter and get all sorts of opinions you weren't ready for and some you like. Also, Facebook.com/Hysteria51Pod. That is our regular Facebook page. We have a Reddit. We have our own subreddit, Hysteria51. Love to have conversations on there. And, of course, Patreon. Hysteria51 on there. You can find you up all night's Mad Bowler Hysterias. We got a couple. Lisa has done some shopping for some Cafeteria 51s, and I don't even know what the food is, so we're getting ready to do those. So that'll be a fun one. And, of course, voicemail, 773-669-7277. Again, 773-669-7277. Or find all this information at Hysteria51.com and on the homepage, click the microphone on the bottom right, and you can leave a voicemail through there. Fun stuff going over on your end of the world. You got anything? Miss Cryptid Contest is finally over. What's going on Quiz Quiz Bang Bang and Blurry Photos?
Yeah, still keep it on with stuff. Quiz Bang is going to have we have some friends in Australia who are just a great time.
Like Australia exists, you dumb fuck.
they've told us this. I'm waiting for Australian disclosure to come out, but that's probably a long way off too. They taught us about what shoeys are and what goon of fortune is, and they're going to come back and go head to head with two Americans writing Australian trivia.
Goon of Fortune and I do have some Vegemite at home. Oh, you actually tried Vegemite at my house one time, so make sure you tell them how delicious it was.
Yeah, that it blew my tongue right out of my mouth.
I remember you took a big old spoon of it and just fuck you and the horse you rode in on, sir. My wife loves it. She loves it.
Coffee.
She could suck on like a bullion cube and be happy. She just wants salty. So I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I need it to go with something, like a cracker at least or something.
Right.
But
right. Yeah.
Yeah. And blurry photo is not much going on, except I'm still just working on the documentary and
yeah, it's coming. It's getting close. Getting close.
Very close. We're hoping a couple months out. We've got our third draft coming. That we're going to have to see, you know, what we can tighten. So it's in a good spot because we're now looking at time to see, you know, what we can cut out, what doesn't need to be in there and this and that.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So winding down, but still a little ways.
A little side note, there's a movie coming out here very quickly called Late Checkout, and it's a slasher horror movie that's going to be a lot of fun. And they have some missing posters. You know how like they always do those where like the victims
on the milk carton.
yours truly is going to be on one of the missing posters.
Whoa!
Yeah, IMDb, look out! I'm gonna be adding to my thing there. So, yeah, well,
how
fun
did you
is
get that?
That
gig?
Oh, it was through a guy from Facebook. You know, so he was the director kind of thing. So very cool, very cool, very cool. You know, so I can update my resume here soon. A guy on milk carton / a missing poster. All right, kids. With all that craziness said and still no disclosure because David's keeping it to himself. I've been Brent.
I've been David.
And there's been no conspiracy, but.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. We'll be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite, join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a fourth-hand joint.